Hey everybody, it's Chris. Before you listen to today's episode of Open Call, I wanted to let you know that the show that Eric and our guest Tim Murray saw, the new one by Mike Birbiglia, is actually available now on Netflix. It was released on November 26th. We didn't realize that when we were recording this episode that it was going to, we were like, well, maybe one day it'll be put out as a special. Well, it was put out the very next day after we recorded it. So if you're interested in the show, please go to Netflix and check it out.
It's Open Call with Eric and Chris.
That's me.
It's a show that you'll never want to miss. It's Open Call.
It's Open Call. I'm Chris Grace.
And I'm Eric Michaud.
And we are blessed, hashtag.
Oh, God.
I say it that way. I say blessed, hashtag.
I have to leave.
I was just trying to speak the language of our social media guest.
Oh, you did an excellent job.
Yeah, we have an in-studio guest today.
We have Tim Murray.
Yay!
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Happy to have you.
I love you both. This is so fun to be in your garage.
Yes, to be in our in-home studio. Yes.
In-home studio.
In her garage. So for those of you who don't know Tim, Tim played Daryl in Voldemort and the Teenage Hogwarts musical parody in Edinburgh last year and the year before. He also did the London transfer. He is unfortunately not going back with us this time.
Sad
because things. He's launching a giant stand-up comedy career that's doing really well.
Baby.
You've been all over the place.
Yeah, I'm going all over. It's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the most fun thing, doing Edinburgh and then getting to go to London and then tour for a little bit around the UK. I was like, oh, I get why people are obsessed with this. It's so exciting popping up in a new city. You just pop up and you're like, okay, now I get to learn new food and
why people are obsessed with the concept of travel. Is that what you mean?
I've always just kind of stayed in my couch in my apartment my whole life, and yeah, this whole idea of touring, of like getting to do a show,
especially because
I don't love to travel, to be honest. I always feel like I'm spending money I don't have. I feel like sometimes it can be really fun, but mostly it's very stressful, and it's mostly it's the money thing. So, and I always start to get like really anxious about like, oh, well, while I'm here, is there an audition that I'm missing? Or should I be doing something professionally to help myself? So to perform and go to a new city is so, so fun.
Do you feel like you're acquiring new like fans as you go around the world? Like you did Chicago recently, right?
Yeah,
like
I do.
There's more people that are like, I'm going to follow you and keep up with your most. Definitely. I'm just asking you, do you think these people will listen to this podcast?
Yeah, I think they will. I think I was just talking to my friend Michael Henry about this. I don't know if you guys know him, but he's got like 20 million YouTube views.
Whoa. Good Lord.
Yeah, he's like does very, very well on there. And we were talking about, I was like, you have so many followers, you have to start doing live shows. And he used to be like a Groundlings improviser years ago, but he stopped to start doing YouTube sketches because it's like it's so much more lucrative. But I was like, now you need to do live shows, go back to your live roots, because you can get a lot of exposure doing podcasts or doing videos. But I was saying to him, I was like, yeah, there were 65 people at the show in Chicago, but any one of those people that wasn't already my friend is now a fan. Like, you can't
presumably. That's quite a presumption.
Oh, honey, I saw their faces. They are fans. No, yeah, yeah. I mean, sure, there's some people there that hated it and are not fans, but
I
like,
saw the back of their heads as they left.
But like, it is so different to sit and watch somebody on stage just for an hour. Yeah. They at least know me very well now.
Right.
You know, unlike
it's connection.
Yeah, even like doing Voldemort or something like that. Like that definitely helps a lot too. But it's different because you're watching eight people on stage and you're watching them play a character. I'm being myself with a microphone telling jokes. It's like, I feel like, to segue into, we just saw Mike Birbiglia the other day. I feel like you really get to know somebody when you're just watching them do their solo show.
Yeah.
And then if you like that person, then you're a fan.
Yeah, because it's their voice. It's their words. They're showing you themselves.
Yeah. And even if they're not, even if you're doing a solo show, like, I think about, like, you guys, are you Mercedes Rule fans here?
I guess.
We need to get on it, honey.
Has she done anything lately that I should be a fan of?
She did Torch Song last year on Broadway.
Oh, okay, right.
Which I have mixed feelings about, but she was amazing at it. And I saw her in The Goat on Broadway when I was, like, way too young to be seeing The Goat. But then I also saw her, that was like a three-person show, so from then on I was like, I'm gonna follow this woman, everything that she does. Like, this was so cool that I got to see her 30 feet away from me, you know. And then I started going to her, she would do a lot of Edward Albee one-person shows. Yeah.
She probably, has she done Virginia Woolf?
That's a good question. She really should.
She probably should.
I mean, everyone now else
she's,
has.
Now she's too old.
You think?
She's almost 80.
Eh. Mercedes Rule's almost 80
she's
years old.
She's almost 80 years old, yeah. That's she looks crazy. Fantastic, but she's definitely in her 70s. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you can definitely be older and do that show, but there's got to be some element of like, we have a child that's.
What about a Delicate teenager. Balance? She could do that, I think. Because I saw Elaine Stritch do that, and she was pretty.
You saw Elaine Stritch in that?
Yeah, she was great.
I bet.
She was pretty incredible.
That's a good show.
Yeah, I actually think Elaine Stritch kind of weirdly influenced my like thoughts about acting in general.
Really?
She was pretty loose in her. She was pretty free with the way she like felt. There's certain, I guess, maybe Broadway actors, but certain stage actors that like her and Nathan Lane and even like Mark Rylance a little bit, where they clearly have some leeway as to like how it goes that night.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I really like that.
That it can fluctuate and change and be alive.
Yeah, and I also like the maybe like tacit acknowledgement that they know they're in a theater in front of you. Like Elaine Stritch kind of played to the crowd a little bit in a way that is a little bit outside of the text of that play.
For mm-hmm. sure, yeah.
But it's also like you kind of feel good to be in the theater, having that connection, seeing that person. Mm-hmm. And yeah. That's something that they can do that you can't do on TV or film.
That's very true. Patti LuPone, same thing.
Yeah.
Every time you see her, you're like, this. She could crack and just start talking to us, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I saw Patti LuPone, and so she started singing, and I was like, well, let me get my phone out to like call my friends and talk about how great this is. And then she and I had a lovely interaction about the phone.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that went viral a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
And she was very sweet about it.
Very understanding, very calm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would not want her any other way. I love that she behaves that way. I think it's so...
I guess.
It's like its own brand of, at this point, like, she just truly does not give a fuck.
I kind of like her things about cell phones. I don't mind. I like that she does it. I just wish that not everybody else felt that they
agreed
were...
Agreed, completely.
Like, so... Because who did it recently? I forgot.
A lot of people
do it.
It was
Joshua Henry.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I haven't heard about
that. He, like, took the phone out of someone's hand and threw it under their
That's
seats.
That's actually very shocking because he famously went to my college.
Uh-huh.
But I was getting there as he had just graduated. But, like, every single class we took, they'd
and
be like...
And you went to Nokia College?
Yeah, Nokia College.
So it's weird that he's against phones.
Yeah, he loves the snake game, but, like, he was not having you have your phone in the theater.
I bet Tim Murray wants to play the snake game with Joshua Henry.
Yeah, Josh, if you're listening, and you decide to be gay, because that's how it works, please call me.
It's a decision.
Yeah.
Well, that's, the more that snake eats, the longer it gets.
Oh, my God.
My mother listens to this.
How is she going to handle it?
Have you heard The Wrong Man?
No, not yet.
No, but what's interesting is I listen to the podcast of the guy who wrote that.
Oh, really? I didn't know he had a podcast.
Ross Golan. Well, he's not a musical theater writer. I mean, he is because he wrote musical theater.
Sure, but
his podcast he wrote songs for like, what's her name? Dangerous Woman.
Ariana Grande?
Is that Ariana Grande? Yeah.
Or Beyonce.
He's like a pop songwriter. And so he'll bring his podcast. It's called And the Writer Is. It's actually really interesting. He brings on pop writers and they'll talk about this whole world of LA pop songwriting. That's like you write demos and you go have sessions with other ones. And the guests he has on, they'll be like, oh yeah, I had like three cuts on the Beyonce album. Like they're like huge writers.
That's amazing.
And his background is like, if you look at he's not as big as some of them, but he has like three or four songs that are like, oh, I know that song. So that's the podcast that I listened to Jason Robert Brown on recently.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's
because
cool.
Jason Robert Brown wrote a song for Ariana Grande.
Really?
Yes, because because
of 13, the musical.
Because of 13.
Right.
She like out of the blue reached out to him to say, can you write a song for this one album?
Hmm.
And then it didn't make the album and it went on as like a bonus track.
Oh, interesting.
So anyway, that's... So now lately on the podcast, he's been like talking about writing The Wrong Man. So have you seen it?
I have not seen it. I tried to see it when I was in New York, but I only had like a couple of days when I was there. And
you had to see Aladdin.
I had to see Aladdin for the seventh time. I couldn't get tickets. It's really good. I've listened to the I guess you would call it a concept album or something. It's just the guy Ross singing all of the songs.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I really can't wait for the album because Josh Henry obviously is so good. And Sierra Renee is the girl, and she is in Lanky Scoliosis with Chris and myself. Oh. She is who Lanky ends up with.
A little web series that, I don't mean to say little.
Fuck you.
But yeah, award-winning.
Award-winning web series that Chris was in that I wrote with my brother. And Sierra was just someone I was a fan
nominated
of.
For something?
You were nominated for Best Supporting Actor at the Houston, your hometown.
Yeah.
Houston Comedy Film Festival.
That's silly.
You lost.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the silly part.
So did I.
I forgot to mention that you also have a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My podcast with my friend Peter Kim, Slumber Party. We interview LGBTQ comedians about their sleepover experiences growing up.
Also, I was on a guest on it a couple of weeks ago, and in that podcast, we mentioned that you were going to Chicago, and you were like not sure if you were going to even sell tickets for it.
Yeah.
Because you weren't sure who would show up in Chicago.
Right.
So it's cool that you sold those out, right?
Yeah. That was very cool.
Let me read you some songs that Ross Golan has written.
Oh, yeah.
And you tell me if you know any of these songs. Eric, I will assume you haven't.
Oh.
Same Old Love by Selena Gomez.
Oh, okay. So I don't know anything about Selena Gomez, but we all know that song.
Okay.
It's like... dun, 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 that same old love. Dun, 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 dun. You know what I'm saying?
Nope.
If you heard it, it's like a song that plays like at a Rite Aid. Like you have heard it. You know what I mean? It's like it's one of those songs that was everywhere.
I shop at CVS. I'm sorry.
That same old love.
My House by Flo Rida.
That
I think that's Welcome to My House.
Oh, sure, we know that.
Compass by Lady Antebellum.
I don't know anything about Lady Antebellum.
I only know that one song.
Dangerous Woman by Ariana Grande.
Okay, I don't remember the melody of that either, but that's also a very famous song.
Okay.
So he's done well.
That's like, da, 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 to a dangerous woman.
Oh, it's like, da, 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 da.
It actually goes like this. Da, 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 da,
da. Oh, I thought it goes, da, 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 da.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. It's a dangerous, dangerous woman. It's dangerous. Okay, this is Take You by Justin Bieber.
Don't know that.
Mm-mm. Marilyn Monroe by Nicki Minaj.
Don't know that. I wish I was better about new pop.
I thought you did know new pop.
I know. I thought you were on the cutting edge.
People think that about me, but like if you showed me a picture of someone said like Charlie XCX the other day, and I was like, I'm going to be honest, I don't know who that is. I've heard that name.
I've heard that name as well.
But I could not tell you, honestly, if that were a boy, male, or non-binary
That's
person.
Like Megan Thee Stallion. That's another name I've heard.
Never heard of that even.
That is a new hot artist. Megan the Thee Stallion.
I don't like that, but
cut to 3 months from now when Tim is like,
I'm obsessed with
wearing a t-shirt, yeah, showing absolutely. You his tattoo.
I will say the two new ones that I've done deep dives into because everyone's like, you got us. So I was like, okay, let me start. Kim Petras, phenomenal.
Don't know.
Never heard.
She's got just released an album that was like Halloween themed, which is just really smart marketing.
Mm.
Like, and the opening song is called There Will Be Blood, and it's just such a jam. Every song is, there's a song called Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's gonna be a massacre.
That's interesting. Not many good. Halloween albums.
I know, it was a really smart move, and it worked. Like, it hooked the gays.
Yeah.
And so, like, every gay person I know, like, she sold out her concert here, like,
I can't wait for
seconds.
Her Memorial Day album. That's gonna be amazing.
Mm.
What's it like with a Monday off? Yeah. What about Billie Eilish?
That was the other one I was going to say.
Oh, she's incredible.
I like her a lot.
Really good.
She's so good.
And the other one, Lizzo.
She's
so good. Those are like the new pop people that I'm...
What about formerly known as Twigs?
What?
I got to play her for you.
What is that?
He just bought the vinyl of that.
I bought the vinyl of it, showed Eric the cover, and he was like, ugh.
I was disturbed by the vinyl.
Formerly known as Twigs?
Yeah, FKA Twigs is her name. Have you seen that Apple commercial where there's a girl dancing in her apartment and she like stretches out the apartment?
It was like a few months ago.
I'll show it to you.
6 months ago, yeah. Probably.
Anyway,
it's her.
It's her.
She started off as a dancer. Now she's got a pop career.
Yes.
Oh, that's
cool.
And
she's really good. So last week, it'll end up being last week when this comes out. I had gotten these tickets to the new one by Mike Birbiglia. Through UCB, basically. And I couldn't go because I had to work I had like a gig.
Gross.
what were you doing, Chris?
I don't think I can say, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even grosser. No.
You were filming something.
I was filming something, a show that I like a lot.
That'll be on...
That I was happy... It'll be on a streaming service at some point.
Wait, that's exciting. You tell me off pod?
Yeah, yeah. So Eric had an extra ticket to go, and you invited Tim to go see the new one. So that's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so let's jump in.
Thank you for inviting me. That was very fun.
I was glad to have you.
Let me ask: were you a fan of his before this?
I was. I'm not real super familiar. I've watched a few of his stand-up specials on Netflix, and I've seen that. We talked about it.
Don't Think Twice.
That one, the film. Don't Think Twice.
You've seen Sleepwalk with Me, and
did I watch that?
Yeah, and My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. I think of the two specials you've seen.
Oh, Sleepwalk With Me is not a movie.
Oh, Sleepwalk With Me is also an indie movie that he made. Oh, he might also have a special.
I believe
that,
you have seen the... I'm sorry. Sleepwalk With Me, what? Yeah, right.
I've not seen that.
But you've seen the like Netflix special.
Yes.
Like when they put it on whatever.
Streaming. Yes.
And Sleepwalk With Me, the movie, is like a narrative telling of...
His sleep.
What happened. Yeah,
issues. Yeah.
Yeah.
Besides that, I don't know that there's a ton more for you to be a fan of Mike Birbiglia of. It's not like he has like five other specials.
Yeah, I guess it's just but that's a lot of stuff. I mean, that's,
he's also acted in a fair amount of stuff.
Yeah, he was on Orange is the New Black for a while. He's in the Trainwreck, famously. That was like probably his biggest profile movie.
I don't remember him in that movie at all.
He has a few good scenes in Girls.
He's on Girls?
Yeah, he interviews Hannah and they like... might have gone to the same college or something, and she says, like, in the interview, she says, like, oh yeah, the school had a reputation for being like date rapey,
yeah,
there, and or maybe he says that, and she's like, oh, it seems like that stopped once you left, is the joke that she makes.
Oh, God.
In a job interview. And then it just goes sour from there. He's also in Billions.
Oh, never seen that.
But. As a love interest for the non-binary Taylor on Billions.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Oh, that's cool. He, in Trainwreck, he plays Brie Larson's husband. He plays like the good version of a husband that...
Oh, right.
Her sister's husband. Mm-hmm. That she's like, oh yeah, this is like the nice guy that you wanna... That's kind of his shtick. Mm-hmm. He's like sort of the... and that's sort of, I think, what he represents in the comedy community too. Like, it was very cool to watch a straight white man do stand-up and... have it be just great and like not
like reactive.
Yeah, not reactive. It was like intelligent. Like you can't not talk about it, I guess, if you're a straight white male comic. Like you can't not talk about gender or not talk about race or not talk about any of that stuff. Like it's so prevalent right now, like the Me Too movement. But he had, I thought, really interesting perspective that wasn't... I feel like there's two sides of it that you always see. There's either like the Dave Chappelle route where you're like, okay, I'm being very defensive here. Mm-hmm. Or there's what I think is worse, which is like...
Let me
just capitalize on this thing that's happening and not really say anything. Aren't straight white men the worst?
Yeah.
We're the worst. And it's like, okay, you probably are the worst. You're probably leaving stage and doing something real shitty.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get away with it by being like... Honestly, that's what Louis C.K. did, to throw it out there. Like, he was doing that bad stuff, but then also trying to pretend...
Oh, you mean before?
That he was an advocate. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he was doing it before because you thought, oh, he's not really like that. Like, or he sees where the line is between his sort of corrosive thoughts and the way a person should act in real life.
Yeah.
And the fact that that you believed that there was that line... is what let you laugh at his jokes.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then
yeah,
when
yeah.
It was like, oh, that line's not there, then it's like, well, then this isn't very funny.
Yeah,
anymore.
This is gross.
Which to me makes it twice as gross because he recognizes where the line is, he talks about where the line is, and then he consciously steps over it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
gross.
Whereas like Dave Chappelle, I think, was like, as awful as some of the shit that he says is, I recently watched the whole special because I was like, I just want to be informed on this.
And you're like, you found yourself agreeing with him.
I will say, this is going to get me in trouble, but I have way more respect for him after watching it than I did just hearing about it.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, at least you are wrong and you're committing to being wrong and you're saying something you truly believe. And now hopefully we can have a conversation about that. Like, hopefully someone will sit you down and be like, hey, this was fucked because.
Yeah.
Whereas other comedians just are like hiding and not saying the thing, and then we never have the conversation, it never progresses. And, but they're saying that stuff to their friends. At least Dave Chappelle had the balls to like get up in front of everybody and say the thing. As dangerous as it can be, I think it does forward the conversation.
Yeah.
And he is really smart. And the parts of the special that aren't transphobic and aren't homophobic and aren't, you know, yet the list goes on, the full 40 minutes of it that are good are really smart, interesting takes. And he is still like a black male who the perspective, I think, of that in comedy is still interesting.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to be said that I think he says better than most people.
Yeah. Just to note, Tim is wearing a shirt with Harvey Weinstein on it.
Who is my favorite comedian, actually.
It reminds me of 10 years ago doing stand-up when there were a lot of straight comedians that all had a joke about gay marriage. And they would all be like, and like more than half of them were just variations of like, you know, like, why don't we let the gays get married? Either, like, they can be as miserable as we are.
Right.
Or it's not like they're trying to marry you kind of thing. And it was just, after a while, I was like, why are you guys all talking about this? It's not your issue.
It's not your thing to talk about.
You don't really seem to care that much, except that you... It's a topic for you to talk about.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you've like heard it or read it in a headline. That's where I'm at right now with the transphobia shit. It's like,
yeah.
I never need to hear another comedian, straight, gay, whatever, make the pronoun joke. It's all the same joke. It's always like, I'm not going to identify as they. I'm going to identify as a location. I'm going to identify as, it's they or them? Learn grammar. I'm like, shut up.
Wait, that is the joke that you're hearing a lot?
I've, not kidding, never been to an open mic where I didn't hear some version of that joke. Not only that, Dave Chappelle has it in his special. Louis C.K. had it with the leak that went out. I did a show in New York City the other day with Diane Chorley, which was so awesome. And I'm not going to put them on blast because everyone's figuring their shit out in real time. But this person had a they-them joke, was like kind of their whole shtick. And it was a gay man. And I was like, I literally wanted to be like, fuck you. Like, this sucks. Enough.
So we're done with this. What I'm surprised about is that it sounds like most of the jokes are still on the side of... they are uncomfortable with the concept and wrapping their brain around the idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to being on the other side of it and making jokes about, like, why is this so hard?
Yeah.
Which is, those are the interesting young comics, I think, that are doing that.
Well, yeah. I had one. I'm not young or interesting.
That's true.
Is yours good?
No, probably not. My joke was just that, like, what it, you know, people find it so hard to be like, I'll tell you what my pronoun is. Can you remember it? It's like, yeah, it must be. Can you imagine the idea if everybody you met gave you a different word that you had to remember them by? Like, that would be crazy. Like, if you had to remember a different set of sounds for each person that you met.
That's in your life, pretty good.
You know.
Yeah, that's good.
So you wouldn't be mad if I did that in an open mic.
No, I think that's great because there is defending it.
Yeah, but there is also an element of like,
it's not yours. Why do I need to talk about it? Yeah, that's how I feel whenever a straight guy does it, because even if they are defending it or saying something nice about it, it's just kind of like, why would I want your point of view on this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think you could maybe be closer to getting away with it because you are a member of the LGBT community, at least. Like, no, you're not trans,
provisionally. Until I, you know, assuming I pay my dues for this next year.
Like, I would obviously much rather see a trans person talk about being trans on stage.
Well, the other thing is that, like, you know, assuming I write enough material, then why should I keep the things that I'm just getting away with?
Exactly.
Unless they are, like, fucking hilarious. They are so funny that it clears the bar of... That it's not really that isn't one that's like so hilarious.
But that is a good point, because that's the Dave Chappelle thing that I'm talking about. Like, sometimes he does have stuff where I'm like, I truly don't think there's another comedian in the world that could write a setup that good or a punchline that good or deliver it in the way that you just did. I literally watched the special with my arms crossed being like, this is going to be so transphobic, homophobic, and shitty and bad. Mm-hmm. And he's bad for the community. And then by the end, I really was like, yes, those things are all true, but damn, I get why people listen to you, because he is really good at the craft.
Also, your neighbor reported you for loud sounds of harumphing.
Yeah, I kept harumphing for the first 20 minutes.
I love a good harumph.
It was like watching Lincoln, the movie. When I saw Lincoln, I was like, the number of white actors that have just been brought in to harumph, where they're in their little, like, whatever times, 1800s Congress, and Lincoln will say something, and they're like, well, you can't do it like that. Like, what are the auditions like? All the auditions are just like, just come in and be like, you know, that's wrong. That's impossible.
Just be flustered and pissed.
And Lincoln has, like, name actors in all the small parts.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I think, like, David Costabile, not that he's a big name, but, like, David Costabile and all these people where, you recognize all the faces, and they have, like, one line. Yeah. So
that's the kind of actor I want to be.
How much of a fan of Birbiglia were you going into this?
Pretty big. Uh-huh. Yeah, I really like him a lot. I think what I really love about him in this reaffirmed for me was the type of comedy that I love, which is what I'm talking about with the Chappelle thing. Is like, it's hard not to say, damn, he's so good at this thing that comedy always has been, this setup punchline thing. Mm-hmm. But I love this new world of comedy that we're getting to see. This Hannah Gadsby, Mike Birbiglia, I think I would put in the same boat as her of storytelling. I enjoy it so much more. I think it's so much more interesting for me. I like a theatrical aspect to stand up where it's not necessarily yuck, set up punchline jokes. I just always see the work being done when that's happening. And I'm always like, I don't ever genuinely really laugh at straight up stand up where it's just like, this is the thing. And then this surprise punch. Whereas Mike Birbiglia or Hannah Gadsby or someone, I'm sure there's many other examples, but that's all I can think of off the top of my head, is like, this is a narrative that I'm spinning for you. It's closer to a solo show or like a one woman or one man show. But at the same time, you're like, no, this is comedy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's great. It was really refreshing and fun to watch him do it, especially because it was like a Thursday matinee.
Yeah.
Just like full of old people. And a lot of stuff I don't think was like really hitting gangbusters, but I still felt like he was having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was inspiring to me because I beat myself up so badly after shows. And it was cool to see him like do a Thursday matinee and feel like, oh, I think he was really proud of that. And it was fun to watch.
Meanwhile, he walked off stage and punched himself in the face. But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe he's like,
God damn it.
Maybe he's like, I'm never doing this again.
He's like, I failed Tim Murray and Eric Misha.
Right. And all those other UCP people that were there. He did comment on the fact that it was a Thursday matinee. Uh-huh. At the top of the show, he came out and was like, it's a Thursday 2 o'clock show. I didn't know these were a thing, but here we all are. And somehow you all showed up. And he talked about he'd been in LA for about 4 weeks now, I think, or 3 weeks. And he's like, I'm just impressed that anybody can get anywhere on time in this city. So, you know, he made a little traffic joke and then went into his regular set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I liked it a lot. I was telling Chris, I felt a little bit, not necessarily distanced, but it was a topic that will never be a topic for me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, just to give, I mean, it's called the new one. And it's also, yes, it's kind of a double meaning. It's his new show, but it's also about him and his wife trying to conceive and then conceiving a child. So the baby is the new one as well. And it's just how their lives change and things. So as someone who will never have kids, for me, it was a little bit like, oh, these are all experiences I'll never have.
That you think, but there's a big announcement on today's podcast.
I wanted to tell you, I wanted you to be the first to know.
Open this box, inside is a baby.
Oh. And it's dead.
Oh, no.
Sorry. That went dark.
Well, it's being very quiet. That being said, I did find a lot to enjoy in the show, and I like his style a lot. I enjoy the storytelling as well. Yeah, I had a good time.
That's interesting that you said that, because I had that thought several times, too, where I just kept thinking to myself, wow, stand-up comedy really is unlike anything else. Like, he could be the difficulty level of the joke he's trying to make, or he could be hitting the specific truth and doing just the right spin on it. But I kept thinking about, like, gymnastics. I was like, if someone were up there doing, like, you know, a double backflip and then landing on the beam perfectly, there's not much, like, margin of difference between what the judges are going to score that. But this guy could be landing the landing perfectly, but if it's not a kind of flip that is relatable to us, right. then then we're not going to like it. Like, and I did think that several times. I was like, I don't have a kid, so this isn't exactly relatable to me. And then that made me start thinking about when people come to my show and they don't have gay sex.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Yeah. That's probably not relatable to them, and they probably aren't going to, you know, I've played my show now enough times to like older people where I'm like, oh, if you're not a millennial, this isn't, most of my stuff is gay sex and pop culture.
Are you claiming
references.
That you're a millennial?
Yeah. How dare you?
What about if people come to your show and they don't like
Britney's? She's got real uncomfortable in here. Britney's.
I'm a young millennial, actually. I'm not even on the cusp. Yes, millennial is 1982 96, I think. I'm like right in the middle.
When were you born?
96.
You were born in 96?
Uh-huh. I don't know, any Hollywood producers out there looking to cast High School Musical Disney Plus?
Well, there's a lot more episodes coming out.
I was born in 87.
Okay,
or maybe you can be on that Encore show, which I don't think we. I don't. Oh, it's amazing!
Oh my god!
Watch it.
Oh really?
We have to talk about that for a moment because
you've been posting a lot.
Not to derail, but it's Kristen Bell hosting, and it basically she reunites some members of a cast of a High School Musical, and then they do the show again.
That's
as adults.
Great.
And everyone I know who's watching it is like, I cry every time. It's so beautiful.
That's really
It's
nice.
Lovely. And I watch it going, oh my God, they're all terrible. And I love this so much. Yeah. I hate watch it. And I love it so much.
That's a genius idea for
Have you seen the clip? It's on like all of the fails and theater fails and whatnot. And it's a production of Cinderella, and like a blonde girl comes dancing downstairs and she goes to jump and she bashes her face into the floor.
Oh,
she's on the show.
Incredible.
She's playing Mrs. Potts in Beauty and the Beast, and she's a nightmare.
Well, she's very bitter that
should be Belle.
She's not Belle, and it's
I
very
can't
clear.
Wait to watch this. This sounds good. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it's really
They've only done two episodes so far. The first one's Annie, and the girl who plays Annie, they show clips of like the original show.
Yeah.
And she's great. Like, she's got a really good voice for like a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
But now she's like, yeah, I moved to New York and I was supposed to, you know, I really thought I was going to be on Broadway, but now I'm like back in my hometown and I have kids and whatnot. And like, she really genuinely kind of thinks this is going to be like, this is going to open doors and she's going to go to Broadway.
Oh, no.
It's very Waiting for Guffman-esque.
Oh,
very Waiting for Guffman-esque. Because she's like, I'm going to be on Broadway. And meanwhile, her theater teacher from like 25 years ago is playing a part in the show. And you hear her in the background going, she doesn't even know that line yet. Oh,
no,
my.
No, because she was forgetting
Forgetting the words to tomorrow. She's like, she doesn't know this song?
Oh, my God.
And it's like, oh, my.
Oh, I can't wait.
I love it so much.
I would say anybody that listens to this podcast should definitely see that show.
Yeah, for sure.
Sounds great.
I screenshotted. I don't know if I sent to you. They've announced, they've listed what the other shows are.
Oh.
Not who they're going to be, like where they're going to be or what years or whatever. But I thought you might be interested. The other shows are going to cover, they did Annie, Beauty and the Beast in the first two episodes. They're going to do Sound of Music next. Then they're doing Grease, Annie Get Your Gun, Oklahoma, Godspell, Fiddler on the Roof, Pippin, High School Musical, whatever that means.
There's a licensed version of
it. Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Anything Goes. And 12th episode coming out January 24th. Ragtime.
Oh my God.
Ooh.
So you're going to get to see, first you're going to see a video recording of
a high school.
Children doing ragtime.
Do you think it's going to be white people doing ragtime?
Oof.
I
want them to do like
that is a very common thing that used to happen in high schools where you would just like, just cast white people as like people of color in musicals.
I've seen a white Dream Girls.
Cole House?
I've seen a white Dream Girls.
Two girls from my college were white Aidas.
Oh.
Two girls.
That's not good.
The interesting thing about Ragtime, I think we had mentioned it when we saw Ragtime here, is there's not actually that many African American parts in it.
No, there really aren't.
The Pasadena one covered it with like four
five,
actors.
Four?
Whoa.
Yeah. There's Cole House, Sarah, Booker T. Washington, and then Sarah's friend. That's really the only four named African American characters in the show.
Interesting.
And there were like 12 white actors.
Yeah.
And then
because there's a bunch more named white
and
characters.
How many Jewish, 12 like Irish, Caucasian, whatever they are. And
right.
Then there's a Jewish element too, right?
Right. There's like Tate and his daughter, but that's kind of it. Like,
but there's a point where the three factions are like walking in and out of each other.
Right.
And
it was very noticeable.
It's very noticeable that one group of like just like white actors is bigger than the other
it's
two
like
groups.
10 people, 10 people, 4 people.
Yeah. It was, and it's presented as if it's like all these forces butting up against each other. So,
I can't wait. I can't wait.
Was this show a one or two acts?
One.
Okay.
It was about an hour and 10 minutes, maybe hour and 15. It was very short.
Like although, but also long for stand up.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. It was mostly him on a bare stage. There was just a carpet and a stool. And there's a reveal of a moment that happens that I don't want to give away because he is touring the show and I don't want to ruin it. But there's one moment that's really exciting and
agreed.
Fun with a surprising set thing. And
cool. Yeah.
But overall, I think he's a great storyteller. He's very relatable. He's very kind of self-deprecating, which kind of, I think, lets you in a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when he's making the jokes about himself, you are laughing, but also you're relating. And I feel like there's more of a connection happening when it's not just joke.
I agree completely, yeah. Yeah, he really lets you in, and unlike any other straight white male, I think, doing stand-up, he really has an interesting and intelligent perspective that isn't about being a straight white male. Like, mm-hmm. he really is an everyman in I think every sense of the word, where I feel like he's maybe one of the only comics I know where like most people of all different backgrounds would be like, oh yeah, he'd be
and this is not a disparaging well, I guess it kind of is, he basically would be like 100 people's ninth favorite comedian.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I mean? Yeah, that's, yeah, he's, you're never going to leave being like, this Mike Birbiglia joke, and be like, this joke killed me.
Yeah.
You're more just like, this is a really smart, lovely guy with like a very beautiful perspective on the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a nice way to spend an evening.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not something like,
I wouldn't say that I mean, was like in stitch. Like, I saw Naomi Ekperigin last night at UCB.
Who's awesome.
If only doing 20 minutes, not a full hour, but like, she is my favorite comedian.
Yeah.
If there's one person that I'm like, if I have one person I could turn on like before going to bed on YouTube, like that's who I want to watch.
What's her name?
Naomi Ekperigin.
You saw her at the Virgil.
Oh, okay.
She hosts a podcast with her fiance Andy called Couples Therapy. And she
she wrote my episode of Broad City.
Nice. Oh, yeah. That's
I remember
cool.
her now.
Mm-hmm. I forget, what is her one joke? Is it about her doctor in the food journal?
Oh, it's so good. I forgot what it is, but basically she like goes to her, she told it last night too, actually. Are we allowed to do that?
You can paraphrase it. I will say, if you check out the podcast Good One, she
dissects it on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, she dissects that joke.
Yeah, so I guess it's okay if she did it on there. But she basically says, I was going to pay all this money to go to a dietitian, is that what you call it? Or nutritionist. And then they had me write down, she was like, you got to keep a food journal for 2 weeks. And I got about a day and a half in, and I looked at it and was like, oh, I see. I'm not going to pay, I'm not trying to pay a copay to spend all this money to see what is right in front of me in black and white.
Right.
She is so fucking funny. She's got like, she's a great storyteller who also has great one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
I love Mike Birbiglia. I wouldn't say that there's like a lot from that show that you would like quote one-liner wise.
No.
But that's kind of what I like about him a lot. Have you seen Sleepwalk With Me, the movie?
No.
I have.
One of my favorite movies of all time. That's why I became like a really big fan.
I do not like Don't Think Twice.
I agree with that as well.
I didn't either.
I don't think most people do, and that's okay.
Especially improvisers.
No, because it paints improv in like a weirdly, in like a really bad light, and I still
and also
don't
just
understand.
Inaccurate.
I don't understand why he did that, because he is a known huge lover of improv. He's even said he kind of likes it more than stand-up.
And has done a lot of improv. Like,
yeah.
He did a lot of improv in New York, and it's just, I don't know. There's a point in that movie, and also that movie has, like, improvisers in it.
Yeah.
That none of them were just like, this isn't, like, so the premise of this scene is we're going to Hell's Kitchen, we're going to run a show, and we're going to charge $35 a ticket.
Yeah.
Like, none of them were like, that's
this
not a thing
happen.
That would happen.
Yeah. It was interesting. It's so hard to record improv for any movie or TV show.
See, I thought the improv in the movie was good.
Yeah, I thought that was the most impressive part.
So it was like the White Man Can't Jump of comedy movies, because White Man Can't Jump, I enjoyed watching the basketball in. Most of the time in sports movies, the sports part is like very clearly choreographed in a way that doesn't look real.
Right.
And so I thought the improv in that movie was very good.
Yeah, I thought it was really great too. Dance movies are the same.
I was just gonna say that. I was like, it's like watching Black Swan. And you're going, oh, that's not her. oh, that's not her.
Right. Interesting. But then like center stage, I think is dancers.
Yeah.
And you're, it's the, has the reverse problem where you're like, the dancing's amazing. You're like, acting is like,
plot is, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of
movies. But hey, that onstage change.
Incredible.
The entire cast center stage is
incredible.
Costume.
Sorry.
I was going to say that, you know, you said this show's still on tour, but it's doesn't have any tour dates listed past Los Angeles.
Oh, well, that's
close to the end.
Let's just talk about it then.
Yeah. Spoil it.
I'm sure it's probably been recorded.
I would still not spoil it, just in case.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. But yeah, I think Don't Think Twice really suffers from being like a third table read movie is what it felt like to me. Like maybe they did three table reads of it, and it after the first one, they made a lot of great changes. Second one made a lot of great changes. But the third one, everyone was like, wow, you made so many changes. I think this is ready. But it really could have used like another year of rewrites. And then I think it could have been a really great movie. Mm. Sleepwalk With Me is great. It's like, you really feel for him. You really want him to overcome this. Basically what he said on stage and what he talks about very often is this truly life-threatening disease, mm-hmm. where he jumped through a second-story window in his sleep. And it's all about him trying to do stand-up and like, you're really rooting for this guy. Don't Think Twice. Unfortunately, every single character is a bastard. Like every...
Which I don't mind normally, but there's things in that movie, and I hate to say it, but I think it might be Ira Glass's fault. Because Ira Glass is a producer on these movies.
Yeah.
And Ira Glass does like to create... the reason This American Life is so wonderful is that they create these narratives and conflict and drama out of these kind of dry, potentially dry NPR subjects. Mm-hmm. Don't Think Twice, there's plot things that happen that are just completely... They feel so artificial.
Yeah.
One of them is if... If you and your girlfriend both got auditions for SNL,
yeah,
you go to the audition, and then after the audition, you literally don't check in with each other, and one of you goes missing for like 3 days or whatever. Like,
it's just plot hole.
And we're supposed to believe that you guys were okay, just not even like checking in, like how it went, or
anything.
You traveled separately and then you separately left the audition. Like things like that, they're just like, this doesn't make any sense.
None of the arcs really pay off in the way that you're like, yeah, again, like you're like, if this had a year under its belt of rewrites, this would be probably so genius, because that thing is so real. And I think we all relate to that she's going through of like, I don't love the commercial side of this or the producer side of this or whatever it is. I'm an artist. I like doing it because it's fun.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin that for myself by being on Saturday Night Live. Which is, to her, it was like, I don't enjoy watching this show, so I don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Like, that, I think, is such a beautiful sentiment to put into a character. It's handled in a way where the whole time you're like, I don't buy it.
Right.
You're like, just, like, if that is the case, first of all, she would still go to the audition.
Yeah.
If she didn't go to the audition, then we gotta see the true anxiety, turmoil, spiral that happens with her not going, and mm-hmm. it doesn't get fleshed out enough.
Yeah.
And then... The other side of it, if she didn't go, we got to see more of her like truly enjoying teaching improv or...
Well, that's the part that's unbelievable.
Anybody enjoying teaching improv?
We're enjoying teaching it. You know, like that character is a real... That's my brother in a nutshell. Of, like, I don't want to show people my writing because it's not for them. It's for me, this whole idea. I think it makes for a very interesting character. Everybody feels a little two-dimensional.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You were just in New York, you said.
Uh-huh.
So how long were you there? Did you get to see any plays?
I only did my shows. Oh, okay. That's all that I did. And I saw Jagged Little Pill on Broadway. It was the only show that I saw. And my favorite album of all time, Alanis Morissette.
Huh.
And Eva Price, our former producer of 50 Shades, produced it. So that was very cool.
And she also produced a little thing called Oklahoma.
Casually won the Tony Award.
Yeah, casually.
I guess I was just wondering if there's any shows coming down the pike that you're interested in.
I am really interested in a lot of stuff. Interestingly, there's no musicals. It's just Jagged Little Pill and Moulin Rouge. Can you name any other new musicals coming to Broadway this year? I think that's it. The Lightning Thief. Which is already gone, I think. It's already gone?
Or on its way.
It was a limited run anyway.
And the reviews were... Bad.
Oh my
that's
god.
That's interesting because it was doing so, it did so well off Broadway. I did not.
Is that before or after your time?
My time.
Okay.
I think.
That Giver book.
Love the Giver. Honey.
Why don't you make that a musical? Could it be?
They messed up that movie really bad. Oh. Did you see the movie?
No.
The Giver book is really, really beautiful. Mm-hmm. The movie's rough.
What were we talking about last night that were like, you were like, has a musical ever been made of that? And you were like, why hasn't, oh, Fried Green Tomatoes.
Yeah, I was just like, not that I want to, but I'm just kind of surprised. Like,
I've actually never seen that.
I never have either.
Let's watch.
Well, because okay, I was like, Fried Green Tomatoes and Thelma and Louise. Why not just make music?
Oh, Thelma. I had not seen Thelma and Louise until maybe 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
You gotta watch it.
I've never seen it.
It is.
Oh, it's so good.
Screenplay wise, it is one of the best screenplays I've ever. It's so structurally brilliant.
Also, anyone that is a Brad Pitt doubter, if you watch that movie, you're like,
I get it.
I get why he became like a star.
It truly is one of those things where you're like, oh, this is the hottest person ever recorded. And it is in the hottest time of his. I mean, it's crazy. And, yeah, and he's so dynamic and charismatic in it. And it's a great movie.
To Kill a Mockingbird was announced. It's going to be in LA next year at the Amundsen as part of the season.
So tell me about this. We're supposed to be excited about this, right? It's like it's like a new. Am I
excited about it? Not particularly, but I do like Aaron Sorkin.
Mm-hmm. Everybody says that it's amazing, but I love that book and movie and read it and watched it to death in high school. I'm not really that interested in seeing like a commercial piece that is so popular already. Like I just don't understand why I would go to that rather than go see something new.
You know what I mean? Well, okay, here, I have two answers for you. One is this uncynical and the other one is the cynical
answer.
The uncynical one is that Aaron Sorkin is a terrific dialogue writer.
Yeah.
And I bet that he has created an adaptation of the material that's truly like dynamic and I've never read the book. There's a court scene, right?
Yes.
Oh my God.
So he's great at writing courtroom scenes. I mean, I love mockingbirds and I agree that you should not kill them.
Have you seen the movie?
No.
Oh, Chris, it is.
Really?
No interest.
You've got to read the book.
I've actually never seen the book. I've never read the book or seen the movie either, but I have seen the play. I saw a different adaptation of the play.
Wait, that's so interesting. Did you like that adaptation?
Yes.
It's one of the best books ever written.
We did it.
I mean, I've read Ghost at a Watchman 4 times.
Is that her second sequel? One? Yeah. Oh God, that's so tragic.
That's the sequel that they like discovered a year ago.
That came out. Yeah, I was gonna say that came out right before she died, right?
So that's the one version. Is even if you're familiar with it, having it be Aaron Sorkin will create a thrilling experience.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
And probably in LA, I wouldn't be surprised if Jeff Bridges
Daniels
does it again. Jeff Daniels. Or maybe Jeff Bridges will do it. Jeff Daniels. I bet a lot of the original cast for an LA performance
would come to it. And he really is spectacular always.
The cynical version is that this might not be why you should be interested, but like it's no one has to be convinced. If I'm like, hey, do you want to go see To Kill a Mockingbird? You might not be super interested, but you're like, oh, that is a thing that people should see, as two people just lectured me that I need to go read the book. But it's like a thing of like, you know, this is in the accepted canon of classics, right? And also, it's not a risky thing. Even if it's not great, you can't be like, well, you can't blame me. It's To Kill a Mockingbird. Like, the cynical version is that, like, old people will be cool buying tickets for this.
That's, I guess, what obsessed me about it is my parents were going to New York, and they're like, what should we see? We're gonna see Mockingbird.
Right.
And I was just kind of like, wait, but I have, like...
They're not going to necessarily see Hadestown.
Which they did, and my dad loved it.
Did he really?
Really? Mom fell asleep.
Oh,
I want to see it really bad. It looks amazing to me. Yeah. The album is phenomenal.
But yeah, like,
But I had to convince them to go. I was like, sure, go to Mockingbird. That's fine. But it's frustrating to me that, you know, older people in Ohio are going to keep Mockingbird afloat, which is already exists in two mediums in the most genius way possible, book and movie. Whereas, like, you know, Hadestown deserves this moment that it's having. Mm-hmm. Same as, like, I'm sure The Wrong Man looks really fucking incredible. And there's a Slave play is supposed to be really great. I wanted to see that. Like, I would much rather
think of it as it's Harry Potter for old people.
Yeah.
That's exactly why I'm pissed.
It's
like, no, truly. Like, I'm like, I don't want to support. That's great. Everyone go do it. I'm just not going to buy a ticket to it. I'd rather go see Sweat at the Amundsen or Mike Birbiglia do an all new hour of his own storytelling.
What do you guys, I feel like?
I was going to say, I feel like our culture right now is so sequel-y and reboot-y and whatnot. It's like there aren't enough original news stories being told. So I understand kind of what you're saying about it's Mockingbird again.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know this story. I know these characters. Show me something new.
Yeah.
And let something new have its moment to become the next Mockingbird. Because if we keep rehashing the old stuff, none of the new stuff is going to be able to break through enough to become a classic for next generations.
Do you think it's a reaction to ticket prices, though?
Yeah,
because, I do. Like, am I going to take a risk on David Byrne's American Utopia? Or am I going to... Again, like, you can't blame me for buying a ticket to Mockingbird. It's supposed to be...
Right. If I were a producer, that's what I would invest in.
Yeah.
Like, that's the shitty part of it. Like, it's... Of course,
it's, you're going to... It's the surefire.
Make the thing that's going to make money. I just wish there were a way for us to... I think it's our responsibility as podcasters to make sure that people know about these other shows that are not Mockingbird.
I was going to ask you.
Like Tootsie. Oh, wait, it's closing.
I was going to ask you, what have you heard about David Byrne's American Utopia?
Very little.
It was on TV. I haven't watched it yet. They did like a Colbert performance or something like
that. Oh, really? The night. I don't know anything about this.
And you probably have no feelings about David Byrne.
Who is that?
Those are his feelings.
That's I mean, Eric, you're not super familiar with Talking Heads or David Byrne either.
No.
He co-created Here Lies Love.
Oh, now I'm on board, honey. Oh, Fatboy Slim?
No.
What?
Talking Heads.
He was the lead singer of a band called the Talking Heads. It's just funny to me that if I say Here Lies Love, oh, now I know. But, you know, Talking Heads, famous songs are like Burning Down the House.
That I know.
What is it called? Letting the Days Go By, Water Flowing Underground. There's a very famous song that's like, I'm in heaven
with
my boyfriend. Yeah, that's them as well.
That's a great song.
Yeah. They're an incredible band, and it's one of my favorite bands. I just think it's funny that you know him from Here Lies Love.
Yeah.
But lots and lots of people know David Byrne and Talking Heads.
Just you two. Sure, Chris. Hey. Wait, so it's a musical?
I don't know what it is.
It's an experimental kind of like nightly event that it keeps changing, right?
I'm so
like, did you see Here Lies Love?
I didn't get to see it.
Because that wasn't a straight up musical either, right? Wasn't it like a club experience?
It was like a club. Yes.
Yeah, people were standing for sure. But
yeah.
I think it
was. It was a pretty traditional musical, but I think it was more like immersive, like people were in the audience and stuff.
Yeah. No, I don't know anything about it. It's listed as a theatrical concert.
Well, I like that. I would love to check that out. So that's what I love about Edinburgh. Is like we get to see so much stuff that's thinking so much outside the box.
Yeah.
You were talking about you forced your parents to go see Hadestown. What was the show in Edinburgh that you warned them not to go to and they went to and they were like, we hated it?
Oh, I was so pissed at them for that. It was News Review.
Oh.
There was like a Brit, which if you don't know, this is like a British thing where they parodied the news in the UK that week. And I sat them down. I was like, you're not going to understand this. You don't live in the UK. There's 3,000 shows here to see. Don't go to that. They went anyway. And afterwards, they were like, it was horrible. They weren't funny. We couldn't understand anything. We didn't get the jokes. I was like, no shit.
Listen, literally everything to I told me. You.
It happens every time. If I send them to something, usually they love it.
Mm-hmm.
Because like we're taking this stuff in all of the time. And a lot of it's like our peers either doing these shows or having already seen these shows. So, yeah.
Tim, what do you have coming up? Because this will come out the Monday after Thanksgiving.
So, actually, tomorrow night, December 2nd, if you want to come to my show in Washington, D.C., if you live in D.C., I'm on tour doing my stand-up show. It's called Wait, Let's Have Fun. So, I'm playing the Draft House in D.C., and then in Atlanta on December 5th, I'm doing Red Light Cafe. Please come to that show. I'm very excited to come to Atlanta. And then after that, I'm opening for Jen Kirkman in North Carolina.
That's very cool.
That's great. That's and then incredible. I'm also going to do London again. I'm on the stand-up panel for DragCon in January 20th and Fort Lauderdale and Miami around January 12th. So come see me.
And what are your Instagram handles and things that people want to follow you?
TMurray06 on all platforms.
Because you were born in 2006.
Correct.
Yeah. You are
13
years old.
13.
That's not how it goes, is it?
I don't know.
No, that was Loathing from Wicked.
That was Loathing.
Well, all songs should be Loathing.
No. No, they shouldn't.
Okay, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. Oh, yeah, Tim, thanks for being here.
Thanks for being our guest.
Bye.